Radio.
The Proclaim 2014 podcasts, recorded by Cradio and XT3.com.
This talk is My Family, My Faith by Lara Kirk from the Archdiocese of Canberra and Goulburn.
So thank you very much. So yes, we're going to speak about these three areas, and as Len just let you know, there's most of you may have. Was anyone sent online the survey for the upcoming synod on the family in their diocese? So it's actually an historic level of consultation that's taken place from the Vatican. So it was sent out to every diocese, and then every diocese was asked to send it out as far as they could to get feedback from the laity, from clergy, from religious, from everybody about the pastoral challenges that they could see for the family and in the context of evangelisation. And so there's going to be a synod in October. It's called an extraordinary synod because it's not the normal one. The Pope's called it an extra one, a special one, which is going to happen this year. And then next year there'll be another ordinary synod which will also focus on the family. So, and it's specifically partial challenges for the family in the context of evangelisation. So it fits in beautifully to this conference. So what we're doing in this hour, I guess, is doing our bit of what the Pope has asked of us, what the Church is asking of us as baptised Christians, to reflect on the challenges facing the family, the vision for the family, the good news of the family, how we can proclaim that to our contemporaries with the particular problems that we're facing. So I'm going to just go backwards because I have a feeling we're not going to get very far through all those 3 points in 1 hour, plus a bit of interaction. So just to deal with what you've got in front of you, so I'm from the Canberra-Goulburn Archdiocese, and one thing we do in our archdiocese as a form of pre-evangelisation, so trying to reach families, is, as you, I'm sure, in your archdiocese, and it's actually the Synod specifically mentions the Australian situation where we have a massive Catholic education system, which most of you would realise is a fairly peculiarly Australian phenomenon. That in other countries, in America, in the UK, you don't have this massive, massive Catholic education system with a Catholic school in almost every parish. But that's just a result of our history and the decisions that our early bishops made in terms of their ministry when Australia was being founded to provide education. And so we have this amazingly cheap parochial system, which people will argue isn't much of an evangelising tool because half of the people, maybe 10% might go to mass with that from a school. But anyway, people go, the schools are very popular, people want their children to go to Catholic schools, they want a values education. So in our archdiocese we decided that we would get this into the hands of every family that goes to a Catholic school. And if you read through it, like this particular issue, this woman, she's actually a model. She was excited about her pregnancy. She was told by her doctor halfway through that the baby was going to have a disability, and when would she like to book in for a termination? And so it's not in any way moralising or anything. It's just about her as a mother, her experience, and her love for her child, and just telling the story of their family. But it's something, non-threatening, but sharing those values, Catholic values, for just every family that's in the school. So all they're going to get out of this is to realise that there's some things to think about, that this is produced by the Church, and it's just a very small step, isn't it, forward. But it's attractive, and people comment on it. It's very popular. People comment on it all the time. If I go out into parishes, if I want them to kind of remember who we are, I go, that magazine that you get at school? Oh, yeah, that one. And they know who we are. So people read it, and they enjoy it. Okay, so there's that. And the other thing that's down the back, I think, had enough problems for everybody, but this is produced by the National Marriage Coalition of Australia and New Zealand, and it's basically just a lot of sociological research about marriage, because one thing we're going to talk about is marriage as a sacrament, but also marriage as a natural phenomenon in human society, and there is masses and masses and masses and masses of research to show that the children in families with their mother and father flourish, partners flourish. I'm always reminding my husband that statistically, according to Australian Bureau of Statistics, men who have the same educational background, who are married, accumulate more wealth than their single partners who have got the same And there's all sorts of reasons for that, because just in family life, they live a more healthy lifestyle, they live a more regular lifestyle, they spend less money on alcohol and cigarettes, and they've got someone looking after them, and then there's specialisation, you know, you're sharing the load, you're doing different jobs together. And married men live longer. So there's all sorts of benefits for marriage. So it's good for us to know just the natural goodness of marriage without even talking about the sacramentality of it. So I didn't have enough for everybody, but they're on that sheet number on the way out. So I think we'll go on to the next slide. Thank you, Len. A little bit about me. So I was brought up Catholic in a family of 8 children. Oh, there's my beautiful children, but you're missing one. Oh, isn't he gorgeous? So, at the age of 14, I was evangelised. I would say I was evangelised through Catholic Youth Ministry, so the faith that had been handed on to me in the community of my family. I started to think a lot about it and find it very difficult and think it was all going to be way too hard, and then found a youth community who encouraged me, and I came to a personal commitment and decision and an experience of God in my life, which has basically, I think, that decision I made as a 14-year-old to open my life to God and to allow His grace to be in my life and to allow my baptism to be brought to life in my experience as a Catholic was the most significant decision I ever made. And I made that as a 14-year-old. And we've got a wonderful tradition in the Catholic Church, haven't we, of young people. Many of the saints who were very young and made very heroic decisions, so we should never underestimate challenging young people to make commitments. And, so I've got married, I've bought a business, I've had 5 kids, but I still think my commitment as a 14-year-old was the most pivotal commitment, the one that's most affected my life, and it's one on which my life has hinged itself. So, when I was 20, I became a member of a lay community, a Catholic lay community called Disciples of Jesus, and I was really looking for something. I used to think about being a religious sister because I kind of wanted to, I just felt like God had been good to me, I wanted to be good back to God, but also I wanted to be committed to something concrete. Like, you can turn up to Mass on Sunday, but I just wanted something a bit more tangible, a bit more accountable, whatever. And so I came across this community, which had a specific lifestyle of prayer and mutual support, and I thought, great, I've got something I can commit to here, and I was excited about that, and I did that. When I was 22, I got married. I've been married for 24 years. My children are aged 11, 14, 15, 16. That's a busy 3 years. And then 19. I've worked in this area of marriage, family and sexuality through outreaches in our community forever, since I was in my 20s. And I've also been a teacher, a public servant, a youth worker. I've also worked for a couple of senators, because I live in Canberra and it's not that hard to do. And I'm currently employed by the Archdiocese of Canberra. I'm actually doing a job that I was doing voluntarily, which now I'm maybe it's a paid job, so that's nice. Okay, go on to the next one, thank you. So, family as good news to be proclaimed. So these are 3 things we're going to talk about. First, that the family is good news in itself. The second, that the family is an agent of the good news and of evangelisation, and also that the family needs to be evangelised as well. So, family is built on marriage as God's idea. It's written into our nature. By body, mind and spirit, we are made for communion with others and with God. And the most intimate and fulfilling expression of communion in this life is the heart, mind, body union of man and a woman becoming one flesh, not only the heart and mind. So all of us, the church teaches, all of us are called to communion with one another, communion with God. And church also teaches us that our sexuality is way more than our genitality. Our sexuality is who we are as male and female, and it affects every aspect of who we are, our psychology, our physicality, our emotions. And the church also teaches that it's our sexuality that actually enables us to have intimate relationships. And I'm not talking about physical relationships, I'm just talking about the capacity to form trusting relationships with others, to make yourself vulnerable to another person, to share who you are and for them to share who they are with you. And all of us, no matter what our state of life, yearn for intimacy, yearn for communion, yearn to be known and to know another person. And we find it deeply satisfying when we can trust somebody with who we are. And the church says that if you're a priest, if you're a nun, if you're a single person, you must develop this affective side of your personality. You mustn't push it away. You must recognise that this is a need we all have for trusting intimate relationships with others. But it's only, and we express that in all sorts of different relationships, friendships, father, son, mother, daughter, you know, cousins, grandparents. We have all sorts of different relationships of affection. But there's only one relationship where we will be totally given to another person, body, mind, spirit. And that is the marriage relationship. And it's not peculiar to the Catholic Church to see that as something extremely special and something with amazing repercussions for society. So since way before Christianity or Judaism or anything else, societies, primitive societies, would ritualise in some way this founding of a sexual relationship, an exclusive lifelong relationship between a man and a woman, because it was understood that this had ramifications, that you formed new families out of this, that children were formed and that they were vulnerable. And that even without children, that we sort of trust in that bond, and it affects the whole community. So it's a natural thing. It's written into human nature, marriage. There's been all sorts of variations, but it's generally, and even in society today, where we sort of live in this Western bubble, but there's still many, many societies with whom the idea of recreational sex just is not part of the picture. And even in Australia, I was doing a workshop with the Syro Malabar Catholic community and their young people. And they're amazing. They were just like, I normally have to kind of work the young people up to the point of maybe, you know, you could consider waiting until marriage. But these guys were like, can we move on to something, you know, worth talking about? Like, it was quite obvious to them. So we mustn't forget that not everybody thinks the way we think, although a lot of the sludge of our culture is being splattered all over the rest of the world, unfortunately. Okay, might go on to the next slide. Thank you. Okay, so marriage is good news to proclaim. I talk about marriage as a growing up machine, and other people do. In terms of human relationships, it's the most powerful tool for assisting personal growth. And so I've been in a Christian community for 25, 27 years, like that, long time anyway. And I've had the privilege of journeying from, you know, being a young person to someone in my 40s, and some of my friends have started having grandchildren now, which is really exciting. But every couple I know well has had to deal with crap. There's just no way around that. People with addictions, they've got to deal with personality disorders, hurts, wounds, foibles, immaturity, selfishness, and all of this could be put under the label of sin or the effects of sin. We're all broken. We're all in need of healing. And so if we're going to proclaim the beauty of the family, we do not want to be twee about it, okay? We don't want to be all, you know, nice and neat, because it's not neat. And Christian discipleship is not neat, and Jesus' walk was not neat. It was, you know, looked like a disaster from the outside. It's a call of discipleship, but it has an amazing strength and power, this relationship between man and woman, that people can deal with amazing stuff. And I think of some of my friends and the stuff that they've had to work through, which has been such a blessing to them as individuals, because I just don't think in any other relationship they would have had the strength to do that. So marriage is a growing up machine. My other analogy I like is I think of marriage as a divine compost bin, where you throw all your crap in and get sacramentally broken down and becomes super nutritious for society and for others and for each other. So that's another nice analogy. Next one. Okay, so the church teaches that marriage is is an avenue for mutual sanctification. In other words, you make each other holy. You become holy by being married. Marriage is where most of us most effectively work out our salvation. We're all attracted to the desire and need for communion. And in our marriages, we are attracted to that, but we're also constantly faced with our own selfishness, our fears, our self-protectiveness, our wounds and limitations. But because we're so closely united to others, we have to face up to the damaging consequences of our immaturity and our selfishness. We have to face up to what I do and what I fail to do. Just when we go to Mass, we say that all the time, don't we? We ask forgiveness for what we do and for what we fail to do. And you get plenty of experience of all that in marriage and family. So love forces us to throw ourselves on the mercy of God and to seek healing, transformation and freedom so that we can love as He loves. So, so I just want to emphasise that, you know, marriage is very... If we're going to proclaim marriage, and the document, the working document for the Synod, mentions many times that it's not enough for us to wait till there's a couple who are engaged getting married to start marriage formation. And the Church is asking us to come up with different ways, new ways, to be able to engage young people with the vision of marriage, the beauty of marriage, what it's all about, before they're even, you know, looking at marriage at all, just when they're young people thinking about life and what life's all about and what's important. So I'll just give you a heads up now. I'm going to make you do a little interactive thing. And what I'm going to get you to do in pairs is to try to think up, if you were trying to sell marriage to some young people, sell the Church's vision of marriage, I just want you to think up one slogan, an advertising slogan for what marriage is. And there'll be lots of different ways to do that, but you might just want to take one aspect of marriage that you would like to be able to communicate to a young person if you were talking to them about why bother with marriage. Next slide, thanks, Lynn. In families, we become better lovers and more able to love and serve those outside the family. So we get to practice loving. You get to practice, and that can be really tough. And I know, as an adult, there's been situations in my life outside of my family where I know I can deal with those situations because of how I've had to learn to relate to my husband, you know, how I've had to learn to stick up for myself sometimes, or how I've had to learn to pull my head in or not take myself so seriously or whatever. So you're in this very dynamic reality if you're open to it, if you're open to growing, and if you're open to the grace of God to help you in the tough times. And that makes us more mature people, and more mature people are better at loving others. So we're better people for the world. So marriage is a redemptive mystery, a sacrament. Our marriages, lived out in communion with Christ, sanctify the world. Somehow, mysteriously, as I submit to the grace of God in my married life, grace is becoming more present in the world. When my husband and I put time and effort into getting along, when we open ourselves to the grace to live harmoniously, to understand each other better, to be more respectful, to die to ourselves for the sake of the unity between us, we make the world a better place and help establish the reign of God. And I've just got this quote here from 2 Corinthians 4:10. So St. Paul talked about we always carry around in our body the death of Jesus, so the life of Jesus may be revealed in our body. And I'd like to say that we carry around in our marriage the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may be revealed in our marriage. And also this quote, we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. And I guess we're here to proclaim. and I would just like to give testament to the fact that my marriage, which is very far from perfect, you've got 5 witnesses that you can ask about that. I have found that coming up against hard times and painful times and times where you discover stuff about yourself that you really wish wasn't there, or great disappointment in the marriage in different ways, to just be able to take that to prayer. And for me, I think about prayer in those times. Think about planting a seed into dark soil, and dark soil is dark. but somehow in that soil something dynamic happens and something grows, and we don't know how it grows. You know, we can plant the seed, but we don't know how it grows. And I sort of try to do that in my better times, when I'm not just taking it out on everybody else. I try to take it to prayer and be real and say to God, you know, I feel so frustrated, or I feel so angry, or I feel so disappointed, or I feel whatever. And just leave it with Him. And I can't tell you any more than you can tell me how the kingdom goes, but it does. And I know that I can look back and go, wow, that used to drive me crazy. And I don't know what I was worried about, you know. So it's a dynamic reality, but it does require carrying within us the death of Jesus, allowing death to take place so that life can take place. And it's something God does. You know, we can't, I don't believe in, I mean, you have to make an effort, but it's not all grit, it's grace. There's a lot of grace for us. God delights to show his glory in weakness. Marriage depends on two frail, flawed human beings. It's inherently flimsy, but it's filled with the presence of God and has the power to bless and transform the world. And just God entrusted his salvation to a 14-year-old girl, to a baby, to a refugee family. Excuse my spelling mistakes here. Who were rejected by their own relations. I don't know if you've reflected on that, the story of Mary and Joseph going to his family hometown in Bethlehem and had nowhere to stay. Women didn't stay in hotels in those days. He was, you know, didn't bring a woman to an inn. But he was in his family town and he was not taken in. So I've heard people interpret that as she was in a shameful situation and was rejected by the family and was then, you know, had to escape to Egypt. I mean, what a risky way to try and save the world. For God to entrust his own self, his own plan of salvation to human beings. And I'm saying that because, you know, we can lack confidence in our marriages for good reason. We can lack confidence in our family, in our parish, in our, you know, Christian community. But, you know, God trusts us. And God's okay with our mess. And God's okay with the frailty of humanity. He's okay with that. In fact, he loves it. And he totally committed himself to us in Jesus. So if he can entrust his own self to become man, and he was vulnerable. He, you know, he walked around in a human body where someone can shoot you, you know, and they did. They crucified him, they killed him. So God is okay with human frailty. God is okay with making himself vulnerable, and we are on a journey of making ourselves vulnerable in relationships. Not in a... I think it's a mindful thing, it's an intelligent thing, but we're not calculating. In a Christian marriage, you're not calculating, you're not trying to work out what you're going to get out of it. You're mindful and you make choices to be open, even when it's risky. So it's God's way to entrust himself to humanity and to weakness. Can you see what I was supposed to write there? Mm-hmm. Because of his passionate love for humanity. Thank you. Thank you. I did most of this on my iPhone and then transferred it. Okay, marriage makes Christ present in the world. Oh, I've already done that bit, so we can go on. We don't have time for time and effort into, yeah. But it also includes sexual intimacy. So sexual intimacy, when we stop to think about it, you've got two human souls, two eternal souls who are enfleshed, who are express their personhood through a body. And both of these people are going to live forever, for eternity. They both express God in the world in a unique way. When God created all the world, he said, it is good, it is good, it is good. Then he created male and female in his image, and he said, it is very good. We will create them in our own image. So God, in creating us, created something the most godlike in the material world. And we are material and spiritual. I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but angels are persons, but they have no bodies. But we are persons. God's a person. But we have a body. Our person was expressed through a body. People often say, oh, the church, so down on the body, so down on sex, you know. But it's not true at all. We have a very high theology of the body. The body is good. The body is sacramental. The body expresses who we are in the world. And through our bodies, we can love one another, serve one another. So when a husband and wife are totally vulnerable with one another and make love, the church says this is a sacramental action. Just as when wine and bread get changed into the body of Christ, that's a sacramental action. When two baptized Christians who are in a Christian marriage make love,
they are making God present in the world. It's a sacramental action. It's a holy thing, and you're making the world holier. Just like when you go to Mass, you make God more present in the world for others who are not there. The same with the Christian couple. So it's a wonderful thing, and the Church has a very, very high theology of humanity, of our goodness, and of just natural marriage. Like, let's just forget about the sacrament for a minute. The Church would say marriage is good to human. If you know two atheists who are committed to each other, it's good. There's so much goodness in it. And God grew up in a family. You know, that's how he grew, in a family. And so family is a fantastic thing. Okay, thank you, Lynn. I'm just checking where my phone is because I was trying to give myself a bit of an alarm when I go for too long.
It's working?
No, I forgot to press start. So what's the time? Nearly three? Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. Right, so also, marriage is an office within the Church. So we need to discover the dignity of the office or state of life we are consecrated into when we marry. We have a very specific role to fulfil and a responsibility to live up to as Christian married people. Where there's no non-religious equivalent to priesthood or religious life, so you can't, there's no sort of, what I'm trying to get at here is sometimes we forget about marriage is actually a state within the Church. It's actually... Church uses the word munis, so we have a role or a set of duties or area of responsibility that belongs to our state within the Church, just like a priest does, just like a religious sister does. But it's easier for a priest or a religious to remember that they've got a specific religious vocation because there's no such thing as a not Christian priest or a not Christian nun, really, or these Buddhist nuns. But do you know what I'm saying? But everybody gets married. So if we're trying to say Christian marriage is a specific role in the Church, and we are called to holiness just the same as any priest or religious, sometimes we can forget that because there is natural marriage as well. But God's taken something natural, something good, something that's very good for human beings, and raised it to a sacrament and given us all extra graces to help us to live it out fully. So this is from Gaudium et Spes, which is a document of the Second Vatican Council. There's millions of documents about marriage you can read, but Christian spouses have a special sacrament by which they are fortified and they're strengthened and receive a kind of consecration in the duties and dignity of their state. By virtue of this sacrament, as spouses fulfil their conjugal, that means married and family or sexual, perhaps in that particular context, and family obligations, marital and family obligations, they are penetrated with the Spirit of Christ, who fills their whole lives with faith, hope, and charity. Thus, they increasingly advance towards their own perfection as well as towards their mutual sanctification, and hence contribute jointly to the glory of God. So there's lots of things in there. But so in the sacrament of marriage, we're penetrated with the Spirit of Christ who fills our whole lives. So not just when we go to Mass, but our whole lives as a married couple. We're living a religious life, if you like. But it's a very normal life and very ordinary, but we're called to be holy. So Vatican II talked a lot about the universal call to holiness, that it's not just for priests and nuns. And it's our baptism which fundamentally sets us apart and unites us to Christ and consecrates us for a life of witness and service. Whether we're married, a priest, single, religious, these are all expressions of our baptismal calling. So this is, you know, if you haven't already got this, I'm sure most of you have because you're here, but the Second Vatican Council was all about universal call to holiness. So the way I think about it is it's like the trunk of the tree. As a Christian, the trunk of the tree is your baptism, and then the branches are if you're a single person, if you're a priest, if you're religious, if you're a married person. But what gives us our fundamental dignity and our fundamental call and our fundamental vocation is we're baptized, and we're all called to holiness. And for married people, they will work that out, they will grow to fullness in the context of their relationship. So, marriage should be making you holier. If you don't experience yourself growing, changing, being transformed in your marriage, and your married life, call upon the grace of the sacrament, sorry about spelling, ask God to make good on his promise and commitment to you. So it says in the scriptures, if you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give the Holy Spirit to those who ask him? And this little phrase just came to my mind, they who sow in tears will reap in joy. So those who weep while they plant will sing for joy while they harvest. Planting, even if you're planting in tears, planting is in itself a hopeful thing, even if it's done in anguish. So what I'm trying to say there is we have to take the risk to hope. We're in a difficult time. You know, we see our children, many of us not following the faith, or members of our family in totally different lifestyles, or we, you know, our own failures in our own relationships. But what God asks of us is to have hope. Even if we can't see the answer, it takes a risk to hope. You know, it's so much easier to go, oh, you know, young people today, you know. But, you know, for my children, I pray for them. And I don't put stuff on them. I don't sort of moralise at them. But I want what I want for them. And it sort of can take a risk to hope for them to have the best life they can have, because it might fail and then you might look like a bit of a loser, you know. But God wants us to hope. So even if we are weeping for people, we're hoping for them and hoping that God will, and even for our own marriages, that God will bring fruit in our lives and in marriages, in our families. Okay, so I'm going to stop there and get you to stand up, turn around, and sit down again. Okay, when you sit down, I would like you to I'll give you 2 minutes quietly, I'll copy what they did this morning, to have a little think yourself about one slogan or one message about marriage that you might want to communicate to young people if you were trying to talk to people who aren't even thinking about marriage yet, just what Christian marriage is about. So I'll give you 2 minutes to just think about that, and then I'll get you to talk to the person next to you. Okay, if you haven't started talking to your neighbour about your slogan yet, you can do that now. Okay, so we're going to wrap it up. I would love it if some people wanted to share their slogans with us. We've got a good one in the middle, apparently. Yes.
Denise really started off with about marriage is like an elastic band. But then we evolved that to it's a fun thing.
Yeah.
Very good.
That's good.
Very good.
Thank you.
Yeah. You yourself used to do a dynamic diagram. You thought that was very good because marriage is grow and move along. So you said, well, marriage is moving a dynamic life.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Yep.
Unconditional love.
Unconditional love. Yeah, burning bridges behind you. Yep, thank you. Yep. Love it. Very good. Thank you. Yep.
Yeah, I kind of started with the idea that marriage is good, the bad, and the ugly, but it's worth it. but then I kind of over them and thought, well, no, it's worth more than you know.
Worth more than you know. Very good. Excellent. Anybody else? Yep, down the back.
Everybody wants it.
Everybody wants it? Yeah. Yep, okay. Anybody else? I heard a good one out front here about a journey. Was that, were you saying something about a journey to the kingdom? I think I overheard, I was eavesdropping. Which I thought was a good one, a journey to the kingdom, which is like every vocation.
Yeah. Looking at the realism. Marriage,
where, yeah.
Well, you know, people
concentrate on the day. Marriage is a journey. Yes. Okay. So not the wedding day, but just the whole journey. Yeah. Okay. Very good. Anybody else? Yes. Yeah. Very good. My sister's 25th wedding anniversary. She said that it had been much more like white water rafting than a gondola ride. But
which I like the idea of. anybody else?
One in Christ.
One in Christ, yes. The whole thing is becoming one. Yeah. Very good.
Love in action, not a feeling.
Yep. Yep. Good.
Messy yep. but fulfilling.
Good. I like it. Messy but fulfilling. Yeah. Good. Like that. Yep. Mm. Yeah, and the church actually talks about marriage as being like an icon, and like an icon as well, an icon of God. And I can remember one time just driving along the road, and there was a car in front of me, and the mother they stopped the traffic lights, and she just turned across, and she was just smiling at her daughter, and just reached out a hand and just touched her tenderly. But there was this, you know, I was in another car quite a way away, but I could just see love, you know. And I just thought, wow, that's really beautiful. And I remember these words about marriage being an icon. People were meant to see. You know, we're meant to see tenderness. We're meant to see. Actually, when I overtook them, I realised it was a friend of mine. But I didn't. I told her ages later. Like, yeah. Sorry?
I think it's something you have to have faith in.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It doesn't come easy. It's something you have to look at.
Yep. So it requires faith sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. We've got some beautiful, lapsed atheists in our parish who come to Mass every Sunday with their wives, and they're just beautiful members of the community, and they're there every Sunday, and they get major kids get there, and, you know, they're, part of the community, and, yeah. Beautiful people.
Partners in Christ.
Partners in Christ, yes. Very good. I like it. Did anyone else want to just comment on anything from what we've discussed so far that just struck you, or that you hadn't thought about that way, or that would just reaffirm something you were thinking, or anything before we move on? Yep. Or a question? Yep.
Another one,
we just have
these strong intentions.
Yep.
Very good. I also remember the evangelization struck me because I didn't agree with it.
We'll move on with that beautiful little segue into the next part of our three-part talk. So family is an instrument of evangelization. So in Deus Caritas Est, I think this is from, Pope Benedict's letter on what is love, he said, faith commits every one of us to become a living sign of the presence of the risen Lord in the world. What the world is in particular need of today is the credible witness of people enlightened in mind and heart by the word of the Lord, and capable of opening the hearts and minds of many to the desire for God, for true life, life without end. And I made credible witness a little bit bigger because I think something that marriages have to offer in a particular way, the church talks about, you know, it's obviously it's a lay vocation, and something that is particular to the lay vocation is we're in the world, we're in jobs, we're, you know, taking our kids to school, we're down at the sport on a Sunday, we're doing stuff, you know, just doing normal stuff that people can relate to. And priests and religious necessarily are a little bit removed from the world, ministering, priests are ministering to us, the lay people, so that we can be out there evangelising in the workplace and in our homes and in our families and in our friendship groups. And religious sisters, you know, their lifestyle and their clothing to a particular set, you know, sets them apart. It's a different type of witness. But we have a witness of being in the world and being leaven and salt and just in there, doing normal stuff.
So, for instance, so my husband's a winemaker, and he's done very well with his winemaking, and he and sometimes they'll write articles on him in the magazines and stuff like that. He always tells our kids, you know, amongst really wine tragics, I'm a rock star. I really am. But they will always, because they can't just write about wine all the time, they have to write about something else. And they know that he's a Catholic, committed Catholic man. So they will always put sometimes it's really corny, like he'll be drinking wine and there'll be, you know, stained glass windows behind him or something. As if he's going to be smelling wine in church. But anyway, but they will often bring his faith into it. And even I found that people in the wine industry, which is a fairly, you know, secular, as my husband keeps reminding me, we live off people whose values are inverse to our own. That's how we pay the bills. but people will ring him like and say, oh, you'd be pleased to know I'm marrying that girl that I've been with for 10 years. You know, I just thought you'd be pleased to know. And, you know, or if they're having a baby, they'll ring him up. They just know that he'll be someone who cares, you know. And a couple of them, when they've been getting married or growing up, for a bit of advice about, you know, readings or things like that. So what I'm trying to say is he's got a position in the world that people can kind of hang their hat on, and they know he's religious, so it gives them just a bit of an in, you know. So we have a particular capacity to do that. Also, obviously, marriages first and foremost evangelize the family, evangelize the children, and we saw this morning, it was interesting because I've been in a couple of arguments, and I don't want to get into this argument about women priests or anything, but I have had a few, because I studied theology and because I'm into stuff. Occasionally people say to me, people who think you should have a priest, oh, you should be a priest. And I go, it's sort of like, so I can be as good as you. You know, I don't quite say that. But, and I was talking to my children about it because they were going, why can't we have a priest? And I say, you know, I said, well, I just wanted to point out to them that I've got really wonderful priests in my life. I've been so blessed with really wonderful priests around me. You've taught me heaps. But I still know that my mum, who isn't ultra committed to faith, has had much more profound impact on me in terms of my faith. Just things she told me growing up, you know, her values, the decisions she made, you know, have really formed my thinking. And I was saying this to my daughter, who was kind of like, you know, and then my 12-year-old son pipes up and goes, yeah, that's true. And I thought, oh, I'll bottle that and keep it forever. But so it was interesting to see this morning, which is not in any way to diss anybody or whatever, but we have to remember that, you know, in this thing that God made, marriage, it's in communities that faith is handed on. And I really love that thing the woman talked about this morning when we think about fishing with a line. And I had this exact same insight. I was in Flores. We took our kids on a little bit of a mission trip to Flores, which is a very, very, very poor, very, very, very Catholic island in Indonesia. And every morning the families would come and pull the nets in with the fish, and the little kids would come, and the grandpas and everyone, and someone would be hauling the fish, and someone would be running and picking them up and chucking them in the bucket, and they were all involved in bringing in the fish. And I thought, that's evangelization. You know, it's not this thing, as she said, it's not the one-on-one, give you 3-minute testimony. It's being a witness, being a net as a community, you know, and one is good at making a cup of tea, and one's good at giving the 3-minute testimony, and one's good at inviting people around, or remembering when they're sick, bringing them a casserole. It's a communal thing. But a family is a community founded on a sacrament. In fact, I think it was Pope, I think it was John 23rd, or maybe one earlier than him, that pointed out that families are the only human community founded on a sacrament. So you might have a holy priest living together in a religious order, but in marriage, it's actually a sacrament which forms community. So it's and Pope John Paul II just kept saying, families, discover who you are, know who you are. If you know who you are, you will be able to rise up with confidence and know that God is active through you with all your flaws and with all the stuff that goes on. So we have the capacity to give a credible witness in the world. Better go on to the next one. Sorry, getting carried away. We're not witnessing to ourselves or to what great little squeaky clean families we are. We're witnessing to Christ, present, active, forgiving, guiding, empowering, transforming our lives and our relationships. And I think I might have said that before, did I? Yeah, but we have this treasure in earthen vessels, so it's a passing greatness of the power of God's name. Anyway, it comes from God, not from us. You know that scripture. So, and I do think when I talk about my marriage to other people, I always make a point of, no, I don't go around spilling my guts, you know, but I always just let people know, make jokes about, you know, oh, I got out of the house without screaming at anyone today, or, you know, because people just need to know it's normal and that it doesn't discount you from the grace of God that you struggle to get on. And I'm amazed how when you start to just talk about that and be open about that, other people are too. And it just makes them feel, you can see the relief, like, really? Even you guys, you know, the super Catholics? because Satan, I went to a conference and the Pope said, Satan wants to destroy the family. And I remember thinking, oh, wow, that's pretty full on. And my husband actually got quite teary. And he goes, oh, that's true. And it just made me think about how, you know, I don't know how you want to think about the devil, but I do think discourage. Just make people feel discouraged. Make them feel isolated. Make them feel that their marriage really doesn't matter to anybody else. And the more that we can, as families, reach out to other families and just simply be in relationship with other families, there will be somebody to whom their marriage matters. And so as a family, we do a lot of just opening our home. We have every year we have a big olive picking on our farm, and if anyone else can come. People love it. They love it. They hang around all day, pick olives, we put on a spit. And they just, you know, come to our home, and we just hang out. And, you know, Tim will say grace maybe at the beginning of the lunch, but that's about it. We have lots of, hanging out together with other families time. And then sometimes we might run a program. So at the moment we're running a faith development program in our home with a meal. And, you know, you've got to be careful. You don't want to overdo it. You have to say to the kids, well, this is going to be for 7 weeks, and it means every Monday night we have to tidy up, you know, because you don't want to put too much pressure on them because they need to feel they can relax in their own house, you know. But there is something very powerful about sharing a meal, inviting people into your space, just being who you are, and then seeing you rousing on each other or whatever, but still getting on together. So we try to do a lot of that. Things I wanted to get through before the end. So just that the family is an instrument of evangelization. Just by being a witness, people need to see disciples. They need to see Christian community, which a family is. They need to see faithfulness. They need to see chastity. I think in our day and age, seeing faithful people who are disciplined in the way they speak and the way they behave for the sake of the love of their spouse. Again, I know with my husband, that's something his colleagues know about him, you know, that he's committed and he's not stuffing around. And that sometimes costs him, you know, in social situations. But that's a witness that people need and want. And I know that they would be disappointed if they found out that, you know, we compromised. No matter how much they, you know, put crap on you, they would be disappointed. That witness no longer was there. I remember some friends of ours who are not very Christian at all, and they knew we were in this Christian community, and then I said something, and they said to me, have you left that community? And they were like really, really disappointed, and they're not even Christian, and they're going, oh no, we're still involved. And I just thought, wow, that's amazing that they look up to that commitment. People want to see that witness. People need to see positive models of masculinity and femininity today. Men who can stand up for what they believe in, but have real respect for women. And just a tiny story of one of my friends told me that when I was newly married to my husband, she was in this really unhealthy relationship with this fellow, and she came to stay with us. I remember her coming to stay, and then she stayed and went to some concert or something and left. But she said that she had she'd just been there in our house, and I'd just been in the bathroom singing away at the top of my voice. And just doing what I did and went off to work. And she, that one thing, she thought, I could never do that in my relationship with this loser I'm with. And so she left him, and she left the relationship because she just saw something normal and healthy, you know, that somebody felt comfortable sitting in the bathroom where the husband's still in the house. You know. So you just have no idea what impact you're having just by being normal married people. Yes. Oh, marriage is really, really, really important. And Pope John Paul talked about this in terms of protecting children from all the pressures. Children in our day and age are so much under siege. They are multi-billion dollar industries who see our children as nothing else than a market, a target for marketing. And they don't care what they sell them. They're just there as a consumer unit. And so, you know, whereas, you know, we know about pornography, where people used to have to go and look for it, now it is looking for the kids and trying to technologically groom them to become consumers. But not just that stuff, anything, like just the whole consumer society we belong to, where, you know, anything that makes life more convenient, more comfortable, and gives you more control over life is unquestionably a good thing. And in a family, it's a countercultural situation where it's not about what you have, it's not about what you do, it's not about what you achieve. You simply are loved because you are. And that in itself is a powerful countercultural force, and we need to never underestimate that. And as Christian parents, like, we don't moralise with our kids. We don't go, "Oh, they're disgusting television programs," or but we make very clear decisions about. Sorry, I mean, that's okay to moralise a bit, but we try to just make decisions and say, "This is what we do in our family. We do this. We don't do that." And but try to do lots of positive stuff, have lots of adventures and exciting stuff. And but you do always worry, and I've always worried about, you know, that we're depriving our children of stuff. And just recently, at the end of their teenage years, they've started saying to us, "Oh, our friends reckon we've got a really interesting life." I'm thinking, "Oh, really?" And I'm going, "What do you mean?" And they said, "Oh, they, because we go and just tell them what we do on the weekend and how we have these people over." Or, and they say, "Oh, we never have friends. We just spend all our child on our Xbox or whatever, you know?" And what we think is kind of a bit Pollyanna-ish, and we don't worry, their friends go, "Gee, wish we had that stuff in our house, you know." So, you know, it's just good to be able to trust that the normal good things that you think you want for your kids, to have a bit of confidence about that, and be able to say no to stuff with confidence. We won't do that one. That was a song. I can't play you because the thing isn't working. Okay, so we do need to finish up. I just wanted you to turn to, in terms of family as an instrument for evangelisation, I'd like you to have a little think about anyone you can think of in your life, a family, a married couple, who you feel have contributed to your life, not your mum and dad, someone who you're not related to, but can you think of a family or a married couple who is in your sphere, who you even unconsciously realise now have been just an encouragement to you, that you've kind of felt better about the world because they're in it? And share it with your neighbour. Time to finish up. Thank you very much for being here, part of the workshop. And there's a few more copies of that magazine there if you wanted to get any other ones. Oh, I meant to mention Alpha upstairs. There's an Alpha table, and Alpha have particular courses that are for Alpha for marrieds, Alpha for parenting. So they're evangelistic courses, but which plug into people's desire to parent better, to have their marriages work better, but also introduce them to the faith. So you might want to think about those for your parish, and there's some flyers over here about that. So thank you very much, and we're going to have afternoon tea here.
Thanks for listening to the Proclaim 2014 podcasts, recorded by Cradio and XT3.com.